And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m., 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We podcast at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We archive them there, and we also link to our guests. We'll be giving you that website shortly, and we certainly encourage you to join us every broadcast. We encourage you to go to the website and listen to the incredible number of interviews we've done over the years, and gather some information, gain some insight, and just really improve where you are today as far as your knowledge of what's happening in your life, which is really the most important aspect of what we're doing. I want you also to know that we try to bring to you very interesting guests, and we are doing the same thing today. We're bringing to you someone who has written an abundance of books. She's written her own library, basically, which now I have to buy a whole new bookcase just for her works, which is wonderful because the information she has to share is beyond belief from my perspective. I cannot believe someone has spent so much time researching and studying some of the things that she has become involved in. I mean, she's an international lecturer as well as a workshop teacher and writer, as I've already mentioned. She delves into philosophy, behavioral psychology. She also studied astrology. And this is something we are going to talk about today as well, because I found this interesting, that she discovered that astrology was an exceedingly accurate diagnostic tool. We'll find out what that's all about. We wanted to have her on some 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, right around the time of, December 21st, 2012, the end of the Mayan calendar, people freaking out. What do you think? It was Y2K or something? And we've got her now to help to understand as well. She studied the Mayan calendar. She's got books on that as well. Also, we are going to be talking about one particular work that I have had the privilege of reading, and that has to do with the awakening of the planetary mind. And we're going to talk about that as well with our guest, Barbara Hand Clough. Thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Hi, Richard. Great to be here.
This is extraordinary. You know, most of us don't have enough time in one lifetime to do the kind of study and research that you have done over the years. So I must ask you, first of all, are you an immortal?
it's a great way to start out, actually, because one of my books is called The Mind Chronicles Trilogy, and it's a compilation of 100 past life studies that I did under hypnosis, and I did that back when I was in graduate school in the early 1980s. And basically, I time traveled over 100,000 years of human consciousness. And so then I kind of had a kind of overall context for everything. So as I went into a given subject and studied it and referenced it and all that, having an overview gives you an amazing ability to master a lot of information.
Well, I've studied and researched unofficially outside of traditional education, all kinds of stuff. This radio program has facilitated that. I don't hold a PhD, although someone did dub me Dr. D, but that has to do with being an audio physician. I can usually fix what ails you auditorially if it's a recording of some sort. But in terms of the plethora of subject matter that you deal with, I do want to talk a little bit about that, because we were talking on a program some weeks ago in regards to health and wellness and those types of things. And I don't know, because it's not something I've really delved into that much, but because I brought it up earlier, I'd like to maybe go into this. There are certain references in some of the ancient wisdom teachings about people living 100, 300, 500, 1,000 years. What was it, Methuselah in the Bible? Is that something that is really part of our heritage, or is that just wishful thinking because most of us, those people who want to live that long, are afraid to die?
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't want to live that long in one lifetime. You know, in other words, every time we have a new incarnation, as far as I'm concerned, we get a new body and a new social scene. And so, personally, I've never had any desire to live beyond, you know, 85, 90, 95 years or whatever, in my case. you know. But what's wonderful about being a human is that we have the ability to tune in to the information and knowledge and consciousness on this planet that just goes way, way back in time. I don't think we've even touched on how far back it goes yet. And the reason I feel that way is that you mentioned Awakening the Planetary Mind, mm-hmm. and that book basically covers 20,000 years of human consciousness. And around 11,500 to 13,000 years ago, we had a big cataclysm on the planet Earth that's been well documented scientifically. And we lost probably 99% of what humans, understood. And so at this point, we're dealing with kind of a very new data bank, which is one of the confusions for people about, you know, the ability to go back really, really far in time.
You know, that's very interesting because in some of the programs we've talked about how the human race has actually experienced like five cataclysmic events of their own making that was a almost complete extinction event. And that now they're saying that we're kind of sort of in a way headed in the same direction, number six. I don't know if six is a magic number in that regard or not, but that's kind of what you're referring to in terms of the longevity, if you will, or at least the expanse of history as man creates it in his mind in terms of linear time. But in the context of the universe, it's like less than a puff of smoke.
Yeah, right. And in terms of human history, I think one of the confusions that we're all dealing with as we try to go back in time and try to understand the past is that there's a certain school of thought that believes that Atlantis destroyed itself, that people have ideas like blowing up crystal technology and various ideas. And when I went back there and really researched it, as well as time travel back there, that's not what happened. What happened to our planet was simply a cyclical cataclysm.
Oh.
But the importance of that cataclysm is what we're understanding at the present time, because actually, Richard, we're really a multi-traumatized species. Because of the cataclysm, and then because of the survival period after these events occurred, which is about 9500 BC to about 6000 BC, we see civilization starting to emerge around 6000 BC quite visibly. And so it's not just the cataclysms themselves, it's also survivalism. And human beings display a lot of evidence of being multi-traumatized. For example, some of the just really vile, evil behavior that goes on. Nothing much else explains it, actually, except that it's a part of human consciousness that went through terrible survival periods. So what I'm getting at is we're in the middle of a massive awakening, okay,
mm-hmm.
right now. That's one thing that I'm absolutely sure of. And even though I'm very worried about many things that are going on also, I live every day with a great deal of excitement because we're finally waking up. But as we wake up, it's just like somebody waking up from having had child abuse.
Mm.
As we're waking up, we're going through all kinds of deep and intense emotional responses to gathering the truth.
If you're just joining us, Barbara Han Clow is my guest, and we're talking about, we're going to be all over the place today because there is just, to try to focus one, we're going to have to obviously have you back. We just barely started, and I'm already knowing we're going to have you back a number of times.
Okay.
because of the research that you've done. First of all, one of the things that has intrigued me, especially because of my own personal upbringing, born and raised in the Catholic Church, the Roman Rite of the Catholic Church, you're a ceremonial teacher. And the one thing I've always loved about the Church, set aside the doctrine and dogma, was the ritual, the ceremony, the traditions, the candles and the incense and the processions and the cantors. I had the privilege of also, when I married my first wife, of being a part of the Eastern Rite, the Byzantine Rite of the Catholic Church, which is even more ritualistically and ceremonially based. I don't know what it is about those presentations, if you will, but mm-hmm. I find those so intriguing. And
yeah.
To that point, we've talked on this program in years gone by about the ceremonies that don't exist in the American, North American, United States of America culture that exist pretty much everywhere else in the world. And the best comparison is in the Jewish tradition, when a boy becomes a man, a girl becomes a woman. And that in centuries gone by, especially in African tribes, when the men took the boy away, mom and the kids, the daughters, would cry and weep and carry on, knowing exactly what was happening. When he came back, they didn't treat him as a boy anymore. He was a man, even though he might have only been 13, 12, 14, whatever the teen years, the adolescent years were. Now he was an adult, and of course, with that came those responsibilities. But we just don't have that in Western civilization, and that to me is very important. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I agree. And what you're talking about, of course, is initiation and passages, mm-hmm. and at different times in life. And I think they're absolutely essential. And that's one of the real weaknesses of Western culture, is missing out the importance of initiatic passages for children, especially adults too, though, you know?
Yeah, I've often...
Go ahead. Well, another thing I'd like to say is that ceremonial work has to do with inviting people to get outside of linear time. And ceremonial work always is very place-oriented, so we also work with places on the planet that we know have profound levels of power. And then ceremonial work is always good ceremonial work. That is, it's always timed according to the moon or according to the equinoxes and solstices, whatever we're working with. And it's an invitation. It's like an open highway for people to go into higher realms of consciousness because you're working with time and place, and then you're also, the ceremony itself takes you outside of time. And so people do really have remarkable experiences, and I'm expecting... this type of experience to come back big time in the coming years as we are really in the age of Aquarius, because it's just an essential part of human life to be able to also get in touch with. And ceremonial work is about experiencing. And so when you actually have a real experience with another level of consciousness, it changes you forever. It gives you a perspective on your life that makes you more enthusiastic, healthier, more intelligent, more secure. And boy, aren't those the things that we need at this point?
Yeah.
More than anything.
Would you say that that's sort of built into our DNA, that's part of who and what we are deep down inside, outside of the linear aspects of existence?
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. We have been doing ceremonial work and having ceremonial experiences for hundreds of thousands of years. And so if we, in this modern period that we've been living in, especially the last maybe 250 to 300 years, is really unique in terms of human consciousness. And I think that we basically have achieved a rational intellectual level of evolution, which is really what the last 300-400 years has been about. And so now that we've achieved that, what we're seeing is that people are more secure with integrating all the other aspects of themselves. And I'm a real believer in evolution. As you know, I've worked a lot with Carl Kalman, and I really like Carl Kalman's Mayan evolutionary model.
Yes, we've had him on the program a number of times.
Yeah, he's great. He's a good friend of mine. He's just a great guy. And I don't totally agree with Carl, but I don't totally agree with anybody because I tend to integrate a lot of different levels. And so the evolutionary model, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't cover everything. I think astrology covers just as much as that model does. But I'm kind of a both-and person, and I find I get a great deal out of both perspectives.
I wanted to touch on something before we jump to the next subject, because this is, you have a one particular work called The Liquid Light of Sex, and mm-hmm. I want to tie that into this whole aspect of ceremony. In our Western culture, and this is the way it's been. I've been through a number of different programs back in the 90s, back in Arizona, where this was a subject that we dealt with very, very intently, very intensely, very intimately and so forth in a group setting. And we're not talking about orgies here. We are actually talking about conversations, lectures, and then ceremony, if you will, or what have you, that we would go off in our part with our partner, and we would carry out the instructions that were given during the lecture, and try to have the kinds of very deep spiritual, not just physical, but spiritual experiences and awarenesses. And it wasn't just about, and this is the way they would phrase it, it is not just about friction sex. We're talking about something higher, even beyond tantric sex, for that matter. Can you talk to us a little bit about that aspect of our beingness that actually is part of what has really created our civilizations as they appear today?
Well, that's one whole section of my work, and it comes through in a book called The Pleiadian Agenda, New Cosmology for the Age of Light. And the Pleiadian Agenda is working with a nine-dimensional model. It's actually 11 dimensions and fits with string theory, but the Pleiadians say that humans have the ability to get in touch with nine dimensions at this point. So I basically just did a deep exploration of nine dimensions. And the realm that you're referring to would be the fifth through the ninth dimensions. And the first four dimensions, the first one being the center of the Earth, and the second one being the realm between the center and the surface, which is the telluric realm, and then the third dimension being linear space and time here on the surface of the planet, here we are in the phone and we're in 3D. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth dimension is the archetypal realm, where everything connects up and you have a great field of complex ideas that are very, very, tend to be very emotional. And so as soon as you break through that fourth-dimensional archetypal realm, which is something that happens for people when they learn how to resolve polarity and when they learn how to resolve duality, mm-hmm. and black and white in their lives, and once you break through that realm, which is something that a ceremony can really accomplish, then you're in the higher dimensions, the fifth through the ninth dimension. And those are, of course, I explored them deeply, and they actually are accessible to all of us. But it takes a lot of spiritual mastery and a lot of intention and consciousness to be in those realms. And so I think that that's the area that you're referring to.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's something that I never thought I would experience. And of course, in my own, I'm going to say, primitive mind. I thought, of course, when I first heard about these kinds of intensive weekends, which were usually Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, that I would become aware of something that was better than what I thought a sexual relationship, or just quite honestly, even taking it to a higher level, an intimate relationship could actually be. And I've encouraged people to find these kinds of programs, to find these workshops, these groups, and so forth, because it can make a huge difference in one's life, in my opinion, from my own personal experiences. And of course, you have to, in our day and age, you have to be really careful what you're sharing with people, because some people are going to take it, and then you end up with all kinds of other problems. But it is one of those great experiences that I think if people can seek them out, and I'm sure that through your website or others, or just Googling this kind of thing, that you'll be able to find that out. If you're just joining us, Barbara Handclaw is our guest. She's an internationally acclaimed ceremonial teacher, as well as a Mayan calendar researcher, author of the Mayan Code. Also, she just mentioned the Pleiadians, Pleiades, and the Pleiadian Agenda is another, Alchemy of Nine Dimensions and Liquid Light of Sex, a regular presenter of international talks, and she has taught at sacred sites throughout the world. I envy you those experiences, but I also have to say that I was greatly relieved to find out that in spite of all of the sacred sites I was hearing about as I was growing in this process, that they weren't just out there on other continents. We actually did have some here in the North American continent. Can you enlighten us as to some of those sites and maybe some of the experiences that you've had at some of these places and why they're important?
Well, in my case, personally, I was inspired to explore some of the really classic ones, like the Oracle at Delphi and Knossos and pyramids in Mexico and Guatemala, and mainly inspired in that direction because I worked with a tour company called Power Places Tours, and they were taking groups of people to those sites. And so that's kind of the area of work that I've been involved in, which I'm not doing at this time. I have a feeling it's going to start up again, but right now I'm not doing it. And then as far as North America is concerned, Canada, Mexico, we have a long ancient tradition of special sacred sites. And if people want to get in touch with where those sacred sites are and where those places are in their own region, basically the best guides are indigenous people, native people, and different tribal people. It's harder in North America because people are pretty secretive. But if you tune into that level and start trying to find it and start trying to find even, there are many, many books about sacred sites in North America, some very, very good ones. For example, Richard, did you know that we have megalithic sacred sites in the United States?
I was not aware of, I could think of places that could be, but, yeah. And I grew up, of course, in Arizona, so I'm familiar with Sedona and Bell Rock and Cathedral Rock and all these different formations.
Right. Yeah, so you're familiar with, places that have special energy.
Yeah.
But one of the amazing things about the United States is that the United States, when the white people came here 400, 500 years ago, was riddled with stone monuments and dolmens and stone circles and stone avenues. And when I was doing research 25, 30 years ago into this, I was just amazed by how this country basically was marked out pretty much as thoroughly as the west coast of France and England and some of the megalithic sites that you're familiar with. And what happened in North America was that when the white people came in, the belief was that basically nothing much had been going on here. And so whenever people ran into stone circles and various sacred sites, they basically tended to destroy them. So first of all, a lot of it has been destroyed. But there are books, wonderful books, that give information about where these places are. And I actually covered that a lot in Catastrophobia, which then got retitled Awakening the Planetary Mind. So Catastrophobia came out in 2001, and then I revised the book, and the publisher titled it Awakening the Planetary Mind. I actually still prefer the first title, but that's how things go in publishing. And in those two books, there's bibliographies and a tremendous amount of information for people who get curious about this. Because we are waking up at this point, and the way we wake up on this planet is actually by means of the energetic systems of the planet. And the sacred sites, like the stone circles and dolmens and avenues and all that, were a marking system for people so that people could use the energy and power of these various locations. And as we wake up, those places are actually getting energized. And I can feel a difference in the last couple of years with places waking up. And so people are going to have an opportunity to participate in a really wonderful experience with our planet. And this is Gaia expressing herself. And in my universe, of course, our planet is alive and expresses itself. And these ancient sites that people developed are just evidence of how much knowledge they had. Like when I go back, maybe time travel back 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 years, and I do that by means of research or I do it by means of meditation. It just depends on what's going to work at the current moment. And when I travel back, boy, oh boy, those people were alive and awake when I get into the consciousness of people. And so they left us a tremendous legacy because they understood the power of the planet so well. Mm-hmm. And by the way, this is also being expressed in England by means of crop circles. The crop circles occur basically at major sacred site points, because that's where the energy is, and the circle makers are able to contact that energy. These are really far out ideas, okay?
Not so much anymore. As long as I've been doing this
program, I know, isn't it great? I mean, yeah.
You know, yeah. And the thing that actually I take it to the next level here, and I want to ask you this question that I asked someone on this program some time ago, and I love the answer they gave me, and I'm sure that I will of yours. And you keep using the word evolution, and that we are evolving as a species. Are we going to evolve to a place where we will finally understand who we are and why we're here, so that we can get on with the business of being who we are and doing the things that we should be doing while we're here? Because it ties into what you said earlier about getting beyond the plurality, getting beyond the duality, which I've argued with people, or not argued, but I've been in a state of consternation over the whole aspect of the ancient wisdom teachings say, we know where we came from, the one. We know where we're going to, the one, where there is no duality. And yet here we find ourselves in this crazy duality. And yet I have a sneaking feeling that it's possible to rise above those things. And I'm guessing that that's part of that evolutionary leap that we hopefully will take, and I'm hoping in the next few years. But what about your observations about our evolution as a species?
First of all, I have no doubt that we are evolving and evolving quickly, and that we're really going someplace. And first of all, I can just see that in my life, because I've been a teacher for 45, 50 years. And the number of people who are waking up is just increasing exponentially. And you don't necessarily, it's something you might not notice as much if you weren't a teacher. But I see people waking up when they're only 20 years old. They just light up and they get it. And the age that people are becoming very aware at is going down all of the time. So what we're really talking about, Richard, is a collective experience. And this is where the duality and the polarity comes in, because the collective experience that we're all having occurs in the fourth dimension. And this is back to this model coming from alchemy of nine dimensions. And so when you're in the third dimension, like you and I are in 3D and we're on the phone and we're doing a radio program, mm-hmm. we know where we are, we know what time it is, we know exactly what we're doing. And we don't give a thought to anything that's a threat to us or anything to be concerned about. But the minute you move into the fourth dimension, and this is what happens, is we exist in 3D, we eat our lunch, we travel in our car, but the fourth dimension is where our mind is. And our mind is way out there as we're doing whatever we're doing in 3D. And it's way, way out there in the archetypal realm. And what's going on in the archetypal realm, the fourth dimension, is the yin and the yang. So the fourth dimensional realm is a realm of dark and light. And when you travel out into it, you're also traveling in a zone where Donald Trump travels, for example. I just use him as an easy example.
Sure.
And so as you get into the fourth dimension, it's a tremendous challenge for people. And what the fourth dimension is actually all about is resolving it, resolving it for ourselves personally and individually, so that we can move into the fifth dimension. And the fifth dimension is the realm of unconditional love and the open heart. And so the reason we come here, the reason every one of us incarnates, and I know this from experience because I've checked into all my lifetimes, we come here for love, and we come here to experience the divine consciousness that comes to us as humans, that we are able to access in love. And this is, this is the divine part of each one of us. And then if you get higher and higher into the dimensions, you're getting into much, much more complex fields of consciousness, which we may or may not talk about today. But all of us understand love. Mm-hmm. And all of us know what it's like to move beyond the dark and the light, and to resolve an issue, and to move into that zone of the heart. And so that's specifically what we're talking about, I think.
About 7 or 8 years ago, I had the privilege of interviewing a physicist here in Santa Barbara, and he had written a book about the fifth dimension, not the musical group. And He says, I can, we know what the first three are, height, width, depth, as you refer to 3D. You know, I can prove to you the existence of the first three dimensions. I can physically show you them. He says, the fourth dimension, this is a little different than what you're referring to. I do understand that. But he says, the fourth dimension is time. Now, I can't prove to you that exists, but I can show you examples of how it exists in our 3D world. And then he went on to describe the fifth dimension. Now, I can't describe, I can't repeat what he said, nor can I even paraphrase because it's not coming to mind. But what I can tell you is this. As we were walking and talking, I stopped him as soon as he finished his description. And I said, well, there's only one word I can use to describe what you just spoke of as the fifth dimension that a lot of people would be very upset about. And that's God. Well, what you just said, Barbara, is the same thing, that place of love, which is what I guess all of the ancient wisdom teachings speak of, and that is that God is love. And that place where there is no more duality, where there is, where we, and this was interesting for me when I was researching a lot of other things, but I remember working at the Christian radio station in my early career in the 80s, and I kept hearing this phrase about, be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And I kept wondering, well, what does that mean, perfect? So I did some research on that, but I began to ponder that more, and I began to realize, okay, be ye perfect. All right, well, perfection in reference to God in the traditional model, God is neither good nor bad, and he's neither light or dark. He's neither right or wrong. And in the Old Testament, of course, it's I am that I am. God just is. So I thought, well, be perfect even as God, your Father in heaven is perfect. I thought, well, that's what perfection is, just to be. It's not about following the rules or anything. It's just about being.
So let's get into the traditional theology based on what you just said. Then how come there's evil? And see, this is where this fourth dimensional model is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Because evil actually is a force. It actually is a force that exists. And good exists too. And so when we start defining God at the fourth dimensional level, let's just do that for a minute.
Okay.
What we find at the, because remember, there's nine dimensions, not just four.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth dimension, first of all, is just as real to most of us as the third, but it's not palpable the way the third dimension is. Third dimension is really easy. You're either hot or you're cold or what, you know? But the fourth dimension gets more complex because, like, where are you when you're in your mind, you know, wandering into this collective realm? Well, the definers and controllers of the fourth dimensional realm at this time are in Western culture are the main three religions coming from Abraham. We'll just leave Buddhism out of it and other just to make this kind of
keep it simple. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but for most of us in our culture, the issue of getting in touch with God is basically defined by the major religions. And the problem with that is it's a much lesser definition of God. God is so far beyond that definition. And at this point, we're coming out of the age of the age of Pisces, and we're going into the age of Aquarius. And the age of Pisces has been the kind of age of kind of the evolution of the major religions all over the planet, actually. And what we're coming to now is we're evolving to a point where human beings individually have much finer consciousness. As humans were kind of herded into great big religious situations, they don't have much individualized consciousness. They're just part of the collective. And so what we're doing one by one, each one of us, is we're moving our awareness out of the collective fourth dimensional definition of God, and we're starting to move into the higher dimensions of God. And if you look at it from God's point of view, it's actually kind of, it's funny. I sometimes try to look at things in reverse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at it in reverse, I can just see how caught up and trapped people are. But I also see how many people are just kind of swimming out of those religions, almost like fish swimming out of a salmon trap.
Mm-hmm.
And they're moving into that greater whole. And once you move into that greater level of consciousness, that higher dimension of God, then you move beyond the duality. And then you're in a position to see that, yes, evil exists, and I'll do everything I can in my life to do anything to assist with that issue. But at the same time, you start to realize that really, at that fourth dimensional level, it's always going to be about dark and light. It's always going to be about good and evil. And that's just simply a lesser potential level that we can access.
Mm. I know that, it's always been perplexing to me. It's like, well, why the heck did we leave the oneness in the first place? If it was such a great place that we're going back to, what was the point of leaving? I can understand taking vacations in this realm, but I don't know that those even exist, let alone retirement and healthcare and all of the other things that we deal with in this realm. You also did a comparison with, you incorporated within your studies reincarnation. Now, I want you to dovetail off of this. I read a book. I have it. It was given to me by one of my mentors in Phoenix. I was at the age of 21 when this was given to me. It's called The Impersonal Life. And in it, it talks about how, and it's actually like God talking to you. And it basically says you think that you've lived many lives. But the reality is I, who created you, who set all of this in motion, have allowed you to get in touch with those expressions of myself that have existed in your quote-unquote past. And I got to thinking about that in terms of reincarnation and how we all think that we've lived other lives and we come back cyclical kind of thing. And I thought, well, you know what? Both of those would work because it doesn't change anything. Because my thought was, if you're going to do past life regression, the whole point is to learn from those lessons in those past lives so that you can better live the present life that you're in. So whether you actually literally lived other lives in the past, or whether we're just tapping into the manifestation that the creator, whatever you want to call it, has made in terms of those other lives, doesn't change the fact that there are still lessons to be learned.
Yeah, and I'd like to add something to that, because mm-hmm. I think that's a very good description, and then I think you know from your own experience that once you arrive at that point where you just know that reincarnation is real, and mm-hmm. you know that you've been here before and you've had other experiences, and you may even have varying degrees of memory about that. But then what happens, the next stage of it, is that's kind of where I was at with that whole issue for about maybe 40 years or something like mm-hmm. that. And then the longer I hung with that, the more I started to see the power of the soul. Because the soul is the active essence or being or life form that is keeping you moving along through all these various experiences. And the more you start to tune into the soul itself, because the soul is actually the aggregation of all of those lifetimes and all of those experiences. The soul has all of this wisdom from all this experience on our wonderful planet. And also even issues of incarnating in other places besides Earth, which is complicated, but that's an issue too, and I don't want to leave it out. And so as you really, really attune to the power and the depth and the knowledge of the soul, then you start to actually feel how every time you come into a lifetime, how limited it is. You start to realize that when you come into a given lifetime, the basic way that you perceive what's going on around you is with your five senses, seeing, hearing, and touch, etc. And you start to get that feeling of the way you perceive, and yet the power of the soul is just like huge in comparison to what we are when we're in a given human body and when we're perceiving with the five senses. And this point of view, Richard, is actually, in my case, I'm 75. I'm getting up there. And when you get up to this age, you start to realize you're not going to be around very much longer, and the things that you love so dearly are going to go away and all that. And you start to get more in touch with the soul all the time. And so then, as a person goes through advanced levels of aging, because what happens when you really are getting ready to die? Your senses shut down. You start not being able to hear, not being able to see, all those various things that go on. And for me, I guess the most important thing that I could ever teach anybody in my lifetime would be the importance of really gravitating and directing yourself more and more into that soul consciousness, because that's what gives you the ability to be at one with the larger whole.
Hmm. I would take it that The Mind Chronicles, A Visionary Guide into Past Lives, would be a good book for people to pick up.
Yeah, it actually is. Yeah.
In that regard.
Yeah, actually, it's one of all my works, it might be my favorite. Because, as you know, I've also, at this point, I've switched into fiction because I needed a broader field to work with. So I'm working on a trilogy right now. And The Mind Chronicles really was my first step into fiction. Because it tells the story of all of these lifetimes, and then it builds the connection from the soul level between each one of the lifetimes. And it's a wonderful book.
When we come back, I want to talk more about, I want to talk a little bit about the Mayan calendar. You have a book called The Mayan Code, Time Accelerated and Awakening the World Mind. We're going to talk about that as we continue with Barbara and Barbara Han Clow. Give us a website that we can go to, because there are a couple here that we could send people to, but I want to maybe go to a sort of a central location if we can.
You would hit me right in my website's being rewritten. Right now, people can go to handclow2012.com.
All right.
So it's just handclow2012.com, which is easy. And in about 4 or 5 months, it'll be there, but it's going to be handclow2020.com.
I'm looking forward to that. Because at this point,
we're heading now toward a conversion zone in 2020.
Interesting.
And, of course, the Mayan calendar has now ended, and so I'm shifting it to another level. And also, it's going to be much more interactive and much more fun to play with.
Terrific. Well, we're going to play more with it here on the program. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. That website, once again, is handclow, H-A-N-D-C-L-O-W, 2012.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan along with Barbara Han Clow, and we're talking about, as I said at the start of the program, a whole lot of stuff here, and I'm very excited about this opportunity, and we are going to have more opportunities to converse. Maybe what we'll do is devote an entire program, but I wanted to introduce her to you in this program to give you an idea of the kinds of work and research that has been going on for decades, not just by her, but by other folks as well. Now, Barbara, before we jump straight into the Mayan calendar, which freaked people out, and I tried to tell people, I said, look, I don't know anything about the Mayan calendar, but what I do know is that 12 years earlier, we were going through another one of these crazy human-created transition periods that was basically of naught. And I remember talking with a gentleman who knew a woman back in the 50s who was working on computers, and they had the forethought to think about this. What's going to happen to the computers when we go from 1999 to the year 2000? And she said, nothing. The calendar's just going to roll over, which is exactly what happened. Unfortunately, a lot of people made hay with it, made lots of money on software that was supposed to protect your computer. And I still remember driving into a gas station on a Friday afternoon, I think it was a Friday afternoon, which was the 31st that year. I was there to gas up my car, which I normally did on a Friday. It was nothing unusual. I was in there paying, and this woman comes racing into the gas station, into the room there to pay, to get some gas. I got to hurry because, if we don't do this right away, we've only got 16 hours left and everything's going to shut down. And I was working for a station that was monitoring, not just monitoring, but the news stories were coming in from around the world as the new year transition, starting with where the international date line in Australia and so on and so forth. And reports were coming in and nothing was happening. And so I had to calm her down. I said, you need to relax. Nothing is happening. If anything's happening, it's because of the people who installed that software that is creating the problems. And so when we got to the Mayan calendar in December of 2012, there was obviously there was a movie that came out and people were just talking about disaster, the end of the world, on and on and on. And I have to tell you, my wife came up with one of the funniest explanations for why the Mayan calendar came to an end as we perceived it back then. She says, really, she says, what happened was the guy that was doing the chiseling on the tablets that make up the Mayan calendar, the wheels, basically he just one day, he'd had a bad day and he was coming to the end of that particular day and he threw up the chisel and the hammer and he's, I've had enough. I'm done. I can't do anymore. And he walked away and that's why the calendar ended. And I thought, that's as good an explanation as any. Now you just used that phrase as well, that the Mayan calendar, is that correct? It has ended. It doesn't cycle around again.
I don't know how to answer this exactly, but let's go back to 1999 to 2000 for a minute.
Okay.
Something did happen, which was that everybody got hornswoggled into thinking they needed to have a computer.
Ah.
Because you either didn't have one yet, and you better get one, a good one that'll work, because all the other ones won't work. Or if you already have one, you've got to worry about whether it's going to break down or not. But either way, if we go back to 1999-2000 and we factor Carl Coleman into it, because let's put Carl in here, because his evolutionary definition of what's been going on for the last 5,000 years is really fantastic. And that period, 1999 through 2011 in his system, I'm comfortable with working with both 2011 and 2012 for easy reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But Carl called that period the Galactic Underworld. And he said that what would happen in 1999 would be there'd be this tremendous acceleration of consciousness that would affect us from an evolutionary perspective to a great deal. And it did. It did happen. We became, we all got rooked in to being computerized during the Galactic Underworld. And basically, you're not participating in collective society unless you're part of that. I mean, you agree?
I would say yes, you are correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Something happened. You know, I mean, first of all, the media, anytime anybody comes up with an idea that might change reality, they just debunk it. So we don't even pay any attention to that stuff, you know? And so the same thing with the end of the Mayan calendar in 2012. But what I documented in Awakening of the Planetary Mind was that during the year 2012, there were all kinds of just incredible scientific breakthroughs having to do with, for example, the proof that we are multidimensional and operating in 11 dimensions according to string theory.
Mm-hmm.
Came through during the end of 2011-2012 by two different groups of scientists. And I'm not going to give a lot of details here because I didn't prepare for that, but those are all in Awakening the Planetary Mind.
Mm-hmm.
So then what I think is much more important to us at this moment is, okay, let's assume something happened in 2011-2012. Well then, if it did, what was it and what does it mean? Because otherwise the whole question is, it's not worth thinking about it. And if you go back to 2013, after the ending during 2011-2012, if you can remember what was going on in your life at that time, a huge number of people report a gigantic level of confusion,
mm-hmm.
a huge disorientation and disconnection with everything that they had kind of counted on as being real. And, Richard, this is why I decided to write the trilogy. Once I saw how profound the shift actually was in 2011-2012, even though you won't hear about it on the media, once I saw how profound it was, I decided I would track it. So the trilogy tracks 2011 through 2020 because I think that this period in time, this 9-10-year period in time, is the actual shift out of the age of Pisces into the age of Aquarius. And so if you look at reality at this point, now we're in 2017 and we're 6-7 years beyond that point, look at the level of chaos that we're in the middle of.
Oh, yeah.
And what, you know, I'm sure you agree. And what happens when the ages shift, like in this case, going from Pisces to Aquarius, what happens in the world is there's a tremendous amount of religious fervor, a tremendous amount of chaos, a tremendous amount of really intense breakdown. And if you the analogous period to this is 100 BC to 0 AD, and that's when the age of Aries transited into the age of Pisces. And so in the trilogy, I'm working with characters who are studying this previous transition, 2,100 years ago, in order to understand what's happening to us now. Because otherwise, people like Donald Trump just don't make any sense. And Donald Trump is doing exactly what St. Paul did 2,000 years ago. St. Paul came along and just simply said, regarding Hebrew traditions and Hebrew religion, he just simply said, you don't have to worry about the dietary stuff. You don't have to worry about circumcision. Just forget all that stuff and let's do Christianity. And this is what I swear that Donald Trump could be a reincarnation of St. Paul, because he just says, throw it out, get rid of it, stop it. Meanwhile, every time he throws another thing out, another system in government and another system that we're used to interacting with just doesn't exist anymore. And this period is really similar to that period from 100 BC to 0 AD. And I think my personal opinion is that the reason I wrote I'm writing the trilogy is that the greater understanding we have, the easier it's going to be for us. In other words, if ever we needed understanding, it's now.
Yeah. Well, and certainly I can understand the analogy in regards to our current president. At the same time, we're also seeing some flipping. And I don't want to use the word flip-flop because it's rather pejorative. But what we're seeing is some indecisiveness. One day he says yes, and the next day he says no, and the next day he says yes, and the next day he says no on the same subject. And it's just got all of us in a state of confusion. And again, I can appreciate and would tend to agree with this aspect of, you know what, and this is what we say on this program, the old ways of doing things, we're not going to do it that way because it doesn't work anymore. That's why we are here on this program, to show people new ways of living through our guests, such as yourself, new ways of thinking, new ways of perceiving our reality and our individual lives and our inner life that we really need to be focusing on.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I couldn't agree with you more, okay?
Okay.
Totally.
Sure.
But I think what we're having trouble living with and understanding is what it takes to get beyond the stuff that has to go. In other words, it's the stuff that has to go that's causing the problem. Because we're all used to this, that, and the other thing, you know? Yeah. So I completely agree with you, but I think the tricky part is the transformation of the old systems and things that we use.
And I'd heard it put this way, and we're just about out of time, which is really unfortunate, but I heard it put this way in terms of creating, shall we, and I'm going to use the term institutions, new institutions, that are going to serve us as individuals, serve the collective, not just certain groups. And it was put this way, says, because the comment was made, well, we need to destroy the old institutions and then build the new ones. And this particular guest says, no. You do not want to destroy the old institutions. What you want to do is allow those institutions to exist, and you create new ones that make the old ones obsolete. Do not tear down what is in existence, because when you do make them obsolete, they will crumble of their own self-serving weight. And I thought, you know, I like that.
And again, I agree with you completely.
Yeah.
Because that's the ideal way that this would work.
Mm-hmm.
But as you know, as I know from watching what's going on, it doesn't always work that way.
No, it doesn't.
Because there's just a tremendous amount of resistance and the emotional resistance for
sure,
people, too.
Sure. And again, we're all trying to make sense of all of this. And one of the best ways for me is to disconnect from it. I know it's going on. It's not that I'm denying anything. any more than I try not to watch the news or listen to it, as especially when it comes to man's inhumanity to man, let alone Mother Nature's doing her thing and we're kind of in the way and stuff happens. I know that's going on. I am not going to deny that those things happen. They've been going on since man's been on the planet. This is what the planet does in particular, and unfortunately, it's also what man does to himself. What I want us to focus on is that inner life, that inner growth, so that we can maybe be a part of assisting in that evolutionary process that, has been going on as long as we've been here, so that we can reach, shall we say, that higher ground, that higher place internally, share that with others externally so that they can do the same kind of work if they want. This is nothing that we want to force on anybody. That's not what it's about. I use this analogy, Barbara. We have a lifeboat. It will hold 7.5 to 8 billion people. There's only one condition. You have to be willing to let go of the old ways of doing things, because where we're going, they ain't going to work.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you about disconnecting, but if you think about it, it's also a way of saying not allowing yourself to be in the fourth dimension and get pulled back and forth. Mm. And, for instance, I don't argue. I won't even go on anybody's show or do anything where I have to argue.
Yeah.
Because arguing just throws you right into the this and the that and the back and the forth. And meanwhile, you can pull out of that, as you said so well, and you can move right into that fifth dimension of heart-centeredness and just hold the energy and hold the space there, because that's gradually where we're all going.
And
sometimes I almost think it's going to go away. I don't know. I'm not a futurist. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I do know that moving to heart-centeredness is the key.
One observation on astrology. I find this interesting. You talk about how we're moving from the Piscean age to the Aquarian age. But if you look at the astrological chart, as you would do for someone, it goes the other way. And I thought, and I've never been able to quite understand that, and no one's been able to give me an explanation as to why that is the case, because it actually goes from Aquarius to Pisces.
That's
on,
right.
On
and
the chart.
Goes, that's an yeah, it's an astronomical thing because of the way people track it on the ecliptic. Somebody made that choice to do it that way.
Okay.
You actually could do different things, but sometimes I think it's God's cosmic joke.
Well, you know what? I have to think about it this way. If one's going clockwise and the other one's going counterclockwise, they kind of balance each other out. They don't cancel each other out. They kind of balance each other out. Before we let you go, I want to just, I can't thank you enough for taking so much time. I know we're just about out of time here, and I thank you so much. And if you should find yourself out here on the Central Coast in Santa Barbara, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation, but we're going to continue it regardless over the coming months. We're going to dive into one of these subjects and just, you know, tear it up, as it were.
Yeah, and I probably could even come over there pretty easily, because I go down to Palm Desert in the winter.
Oh, wonderful.
So let's do that. And also, the astrology, by the way, just briefly, is really going to start shifting now. The astrology has been very, very stressful for about 7 years.
Mm.
And it's going to start shifting next year, thank the goddess. So I just want to put that in there, because there's reasons to believe that we're going to start feeling a little bit better. And I know I'll take it.
I will take it, too. Absolutely. I have three final questions for you, and then we're going to let you go. And again, a reminder that the website you can go to, folks, is HandClow, HandClow 2012, that's 2012.com. First question is, who is Barbara HandClow?
Well, you know, it's a good question. As far as I know, and this is, I'm part Cherokee, and I was trained as a young woman by my grandfather. And I've always been taught that I'm a hybrid from the Pleiades.
Mm.
And boy, when they asked me who I was in the first grade, boy, did I get into trouble. Started all my problems in school. So as far as I know, I actually have like a dual existence. And I think one of the reasons I have so much information is it's coming from the Pleiades. And the only way I can make an excuse for making such an outrageous statement is that lots and lots and lots of people, especially back during the Greek times, 500 BC, believed that beings from the Pleiades come here and give wisdom. So that's about all I can say.
Okay. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
at this point, it seemed to you like I'm very famous and all that, but I've not reached the people that I really, really want to reach. And that's a huge, a massive amount of young people. Because they are, if you look at my books and my work, they're ready for it now. And I've always been way ahead of myself, but now I'm kind of coming into current time. So I switched to fiction because I thought maybe that younger people might get onto that. And we'll see if they do or not.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Right now, my life's purpose is to be a good grandmother. My only grandchild was born at dawn, December 21st, 2012, at the exact end of the Mayan calendar.
Wow.
And I know, it's got to be some kind of message, right? So I'm working on being a good grandmother.
Well, congratulations on grandmotherhood. I take great joy in the fact that I can say I'm a great uncle. My parents are great grandparents, and we have four generations living once again. And it's actually quite exciting to have that kind of community in family.
Yeah, and then fiction gave me a chance to have her be a character in the trilogy.
Oh, very. So you've immortalized her. You've immortalized her already.
It's just that it was so exciting to really enter into the consciousness of an 18-month-old child or 2 years or 3 years. And with fiction, you can enter into the consciousness of anything. So that's been really a lot of fun.
Very cool. Well, Barbara, I want to thank you again, Barbara Handclough, for joining us here on the program. And I encourage people to go to your website, handclough2012.com. Check out all of the information. You've got not just books, you have CDs, music. We were going to get into that as well. Maybe the next time we get together, we'll talk about that, because sound and vibration are another subject that is near and dear to my heart, especially with the industry that I'm in. And this has been fantastic, and I really look forward to our next conversation.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed talking to you, and let's do it again.
Absolutely. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.